Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers, and from
Dartmouth Hitchcock. Imagine nationally ranked healthcare in your community with convenient locations throughout northern New England. World-class providers are closer than you think. Visit dartmouthhitchcock.org to learn more. Dartmouth Hitchcock is here. And from
the Elm Street Group at Morgan Stanley, working with clients to create enduring financial value and a lasting impact through sustainable investing solutions. A local wealth management team with global insights. Find out more at the Elm Street Group at morganstanley.com.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. What's your ideal book for the summer? Is it a heart-wrenching romance or a heart-pumping thriller? Is it a weighty biography that you just don't have time for the rest of the year? Is it a smart nonfiction work on a subject you've always wondered about? Or is it a piece of classic literature that you somehow never read in high school and always said you'd get to someday? Well, whatever your own summer reading plans, we are here to help, because today in The Exchange, a perennial listener favorite, our annual summer book show. Tell us what's on your summer reading list or ask our guests for some advice. The Exchange number is 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. We have three guests. Dan Chartrand is here, owner of Water Street Bookstore in Exeter. Dan, welcome back and happy summer.
Hi, Laura. It's so good to be here.
Also with us, Michael Herman, owner of Gibson's Bookstore in Concord. Michael, thank you also for your time.
Thank you. Good morning.
And also with us, Lori Fisher, director of the Baker Free Library in Bow. And Lori, welcome back. Good to see you.
Thanks. Good morning.
Well, Lori, I want to start with you. What do people really want in the summer? Is it really that different from what they want all year long?
I think so. We see an increase in volume over the summer because people make the time to read during the summer. They don't have all of the stuff where they're running around either to meetings or running their kids around. So we see a lot of in fiction. Jodi Picoult never stays on the shelves, and actually Stephen King doesn't either.
So nice big fat paperback.
Yep. And other things, classics. We see a lot of like Tolstoy, Steinbeck, Wharton. You know, all the classic books tend to go out more in the summer. Anything by David McCullough, believe it or not, because, again, big, thick, nonfiction, historical. And then for the kids, great Stoneface books. We can't keep any of those on the shelf during the summer for the kids.
Now, just remind us what those are.
It's an award that's done in New Hampshire, and they have the nominees. There's usually about, 15 or so of them. And they're really popular with the kids in the school districts. They judge. The kids are the ones that submit ballots and decide who wins. So it's in some kids, this is what they do during the summer. Their goal is to read all the great Stoneface books.
And then vote on it for the number one book.
That's correct.
Well, it's really interesting what you say, you know, all these books that people hear about all year long, but they just seem too daunting. Mm-hmm. You know, McCullough, Tolstoy, my goodness.
I know.
And then they come in and they say, all right, I'm here.
Exactly.
Help me out. What do you think, Dan?
I think that summertime is either on a dock by the lake or on the beach by the ocean, and people just have this mental image of having that book in their hand and kind of taking in that landscape that they're next to, but at the same time taking in the inner landscape of the book. So it's really a classic New England thing to do, to have an actual book in your hand in a beautiful place. And
do people come in looking for something slightly different in the summertime, Dan?
They're looking for great stories. They're looking for stories that will compel them, inspire them, drive them to read a book and then another book. They just want to have that sense of accomplishment that they've read this great story in the summertime.
Michael.
Yeah, I just think, too, there's a different feel to it. In the wintertime, like January through March, you know, people are reading in order to escape from the drudgery of the weather outside. And in the fall, you know, they're gearing up for the gift-giving season, or the big books are coming out and they feel obliged to read them. So there's a sense of, I've got to do this. But in the summertime, it feels like it's just more for fun. They're coming in, they're excited, they're going to relax. And the book is the perfect way to do that.
Well, I'd love to hear from you guys, too, what Lori mentioned. You know, summer as an opportunity to pick up that book you never quite got around to. I'm impressed that people are still picking up Tolstoy and saying, yeah, I'm going to do it. What do you think, Dan? What's a classic summer book that seems ripe for reading in the summer?
Well, the one book that I read every summer is a collection of three novellas by Norman MacLean called A River Runs Through It. That's the title novella. It's just out in a new paperback edition from University of Chicago with a foreword by Robert Redford, who talks about the process of working with the author to create the film that was
made.
That's
right. It's about
fly fishing,
right? Yeah.
Amongst other things. It's really about family and religion and life in a beautiful landscape. But I reread that every summer. I can't recommend that highly enough. It has the title novella, and then it also has a great story about working in the Forest Service in Montana. And then finally, there's a story that has the all-time greatest title, Logging and Pimping and My Pal Jim.
Wow. Something there for everybody.
Yeah, it's just a great collection of three novellas, and I reread it every summer. So
I'm kind of impressed by that. You reread, I mean, you have so much reading to do as the owner of a bookstore. You reread something every summer?
Rereading is one of my favorite things to do because you've read something at a certain time in your life, and then you reread it, and you've changed, and your view of the text and of the story changes as you move through your lifespan. So it's a wonderful thing to do. Mm-hmm. I can't encourage it enough.
I do that too. I call it kind of a palate cleanser between the new books. You know, you go back to something that you've read many times, and it just sort of cleanses the palate for the next new book that you tackle. One thing that we find over the summer is that people start working their way through series. Like, well, I'll say, oh, somebody just bought Patrick O'Brien one and two, and then the following week they come in and buy number three, or they read all the Lee Child novels, or all Nabokov. Around June 16th, we have people coming in to tackle Ulysses because it's Bloomsday again. I still haven't read Ulysses.
Wait, what is that?
Oh, that's the date on which Ulysses takes place in the course of one day, and that's the day, June 16th.
I'm impressed that people are still picking up these, hefty books.
Yes, they are. Yeah, absolutely.
Give us a call. Tell us what book you are picking up this summer, hefty or not. No judgment. 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Tell us what's on your summer reading list, or if you need some advice as to what to put on that list, give us a call. We'll help you out. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. So let's start with nonfiction. And Dan, I'll go to you first. What is popular among your staff this summer in nonfiction?
Well, we have a whole list that will go up on the website later this afternoon. But the one book that I want to lead off the nonfiction discussion with is a book by Alexandria Marzano Lesnovich. She teaches at Grub Street, and she's also at the Kennedy Public Policy Institute at the Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. So she teaches both creative writing, and then she's also in this public policy. She has written this amazing nonfiction book that's called The Fact of a Body, A Murder and a Memoir. And it's basically the story of being involved in advocacy in a case down in Louisiana where a man was potentially going to be put on trial for and potentially be given the death penalty. She was raised by liberal lawyers, and she said, well, of course, I wanted to, help defend this man. But then something in the case drew something out in her that she couldn't quite put her finger on, and she really wanted this man to be sentenced to death, despite her liberal leanings. And so she kind of works through what her reaction is and what the circumstances of the case are and how her reaction is not entirely clear to her and how the circumstances of the case are not entirely clear to her. This is a recommendation by several of our staff members, Stephanie Kuiper-Schmidt and Mark DeCarteret. They are selling this to all of our patrons. She came up from Boston from Grub Street and did an event at the store. I can't recommend this book highly enough.
You've got another nonfiction work that we had on the exchange, a couple months ago now, Never Caught. And I couldn't believe, as long as I have been doing this program, I had never heard this story, even though it's a key part of New Hampshire history.
It's an amazing story. The Washingtons, when they moved to Philadelphia
This is in George Washington, the first president.
George and Martha. When they moved to Philadelphia, they brought their household slaves with them. I think there were nine. And there was a law in Philadelphia that any slave that lived in Philadelphia for more than 6 months would have to be freed. So the Washingtons would send their household slaves south and redeem the six-month period and then bring them back. One of their slaves, a woman named Ona Judge, really grew tired of this subterfuge by the father and mother of our country, and she became a runaway slave. She ran away to the free community in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. So there's quite a bit of wonderful New Hampshire history, which for those of you out there who are fascinated by the new Black Heritage Trail and also the African Burial Ground development in Portsmouth, this is more great Portsmouth African-American community history. Can't recommend this book highly enough. Never Caught: The Washington's Relentless Pursuit of Their Runaway Slave, Ona Judge, by Erica Armstrong Dunbar.
Yeah, it's an amazing story. Go ahead, Michael.
Well,
yeah,
she came to Gibson's, too, and what a storyteller. I mean, she was she had the audience just in the palm of her hand. It's a very good read for the summer.
What nonfiction do you like this summer, Michael?
Well, I think Dan and I don't know if it's on your list, Lori, because I can't see. You don't have a pile of books in front of you. But
it's Killers,
they're all out. right? Killers of the Flower Moon, the Osage Murders and the Birth of the FBI by David Gren, who wrote The Lost City of Z. And this is a great nonfiction story. And as you say, I mean, as you said with the story, Never Caught, you never heard this story before. This is the story about how a Native American tribe out in Oklahoma during the 20s got very wealthy because there was oil underneath the supposedly barren land they'd been exiled to. And so they got very wealthy, and all of a sudden, murders started happening in the 20s. And, the local law enforcement was either idle or corrupt. And there was nobody really looking into it, including the private investigators that were hired to look into it, somehow didn't find anything out either. And just murder after murder and wealth being transferred to other people. And this is the birth of the FBI, because what happened was J. Edgar Hoover got a hold of this story and he says, these guys are corrupt. What we need is like an objective, scientific, investigatory force from far away, operated by the federal government, that's going to get to the bottom of these things and not let them happen anymore. So it's a great story. And I just want to read, I've jotted down a few comments from nonfiction writers and fiction writers that I really, really love. Eric Larson says, "This is a remarkable book by a remarkable author, an exhumation of a shockingly brutal series of historical murders that I, for one, knew nothing about," as you say. John Krakauer says it's a magnificent book. And Louise Erdrich says
another favorite New Hampshire, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, says this is a mesmerizing read. Through meticulous detective work, Grant rescues unbearable truth.
Well, it's on a lot of the lists this summer.
Sure,
so
yeah.
Killers of the Flower Moon. And, it's interesting. Both you and Dan talked about these historical events that a lot of us who read a lot still kind of go, wow, I didn't know this. It kind of reminds me of the movie that was such a hit earlier this year, Lori, Hidden Figures, again, about the three African-American women who were so important to NASA in the 60s. What else kind of fits within this genre of, wow, I didn't know this?
Well, there are a couple. The biggest one right now is Radium Girls by Kate Moore. This is about the women who used radium in dial painting factories and their experience and what they went through, falling ill and the tenacity and everything they showed in bringing this to light so that we could have more regulations. They researched into nuclear bombs and eventually figured out what radium really does to the body. And so these women were very instrumental in bringing that about. Hidden Figures is still a really popular book and movie in our library. We have like 24 reserves on a couple copies of the movie. So anything by a lot of nonfiction books that are popular right now for us are anything about women in science and their contributions that have not been recognized before.
Sort of sparked by the movie, maybe.
Yeah, somewhat sparked by the movie, but there's also some other books like The Rocket Girls, a little lesser known, but again, another way to look at how women have contributed to science in ways that haven't been disclosed before.
Well, you mentioned Radium Girls, and correct me if I'm wrong, Lori, that takes place in World War I? Is that correct?
Yes, it does.
So that's a big anniversary this year. I mean, in 100 years ago, the U.S. got into the war. Next year is the 100th anniversary of the end of the war to end all wars, as they used to call it. So that's kind of a theme going around this year.
I think so. And I think this is one of the bigger titles that we're seeing coming out. I know there are others.
Dan, you want to jump in?
Well, there's a number of books that have been published since the beginning of the 100 anniversaries, in 1913. Now we're kind of up to the 17 period, which is when the U.S. entered the war. So there are a number of books coming out right now and this fall, especially on the U.S. Participation in World War One.
Yeah, there seems to be a fascination with World War One right now. I know even with the Wonder Woman movie, which is so popular right now, they moved the story deliberately from World War II to World War One because they thought it would, you know, they could tell a more compelling story by doing that.
All right. Again, the exchange number for you to join us on our annual summer book show, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. And a reminder, later today, we will put all the books mentioned during this hour on our website, nhpr.org/exchange. Of course, all the picks from our guests as well. So check it out later today, and we'll put it up there. Right now, though, let's hear from you. And Kathleen's calling from Exeter. Hi, Kathleen. You're on the Exchange. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Sure. Go ahead.
This is one of my favorite shows and happens to be one of my favorite bookstores. Water Street has always been a great recommendation, place to get recommendations. This summer, I'm doing a lot of reading about the immigrant experience, and two books that I have loved that are debut fiction novels are, one is called Behold the Dreamers by Imbola Mabui.
Behold the Dreamers? Kathleen, sorry to interrupt. Behold the Dreamers, is that what you said?
Yes.
Okay,
Behold
go ahead.
Behold the Dreamers.
Uh-huh.
And it follows a cab driver who is an immigrant who actually the chauffeur to a man who works at Lehman Brothers at the beginning of the crash in 2008.
That's
and
interesting.
It shows how his life, the life of his family, that he's trying to build this new life in America, intersect with his employer, who is this very wealthy, very entitled New Yorker, who's also struggling because his experience is not, his world is changing.
What's the other one, Kathleen?
The other one is called Lucky Boy, and it's by Sakara Shanti.
And you're going to have to say that name again, Kathleen. I'm sorry. The phone line isn't great. What is it?
Sure. It's called Clutch Boy.
Clutch Boy?
Lucky.
Lucky.
Okay.
Boy. All right. K-Y. Boy.
Okay. Kathleen, thank you so much for the call. Michael, have you heard of that second one? Okay. All right. Anybody want to jump in on Kathleen's call, the immigrant experience, lives kind of intersecting and changing? Dan.
Well, just thank you for the call, Kathleen, and thanks for the shout out. I would counter with a great book that Alice, one of our booksellers, Alice Ahn, has read called Daring to Drive. It's about a Saudi woman's awakening and coming to grips with her society. So the idea of marginalized voices becoming empowered, I think, is how I would respond to Kathleen's call. But thank you again.
Go ahead.
I think that might be a good jumping off place to start talking about Arundhati Roy's Ministry of Utmost Happiness, which is just sort of a broad canvas of different cultures intersecting. It's sort of the literary event of the season. Are we being played off the?
No, that's okay.
Okay. It's her first novel in 20 years. She wrote The God of Small Things back in 96. And then immediately after that novel won the Booker Prize, she took a detour to writing about politics and the environment and was very forthright on those topics. And now she's back with a novel that that is also very political but very artistic at the same time. It's the literary event of the summer, certainly.
Yeah, it's certainly on a lot of the lists that I came across. I'm glad you mentioned it, Michael. Yeah, and a lot more books in just a moment. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
Looking looking for a good read or want to learn how to write one, NHPR's podcasts have got you covered.
I was hoping you could talk a little bit about those moments and how you saw them fitting into the book.
Well, I don't think it's...
Do you edit as you're going along, or do you tend to write it all out and then go back and edit at the end?
At the very beginning, when I started...
Subscribe to The Bookshelf, 10-Minute Writer's Workshop, and all NHPR's podcasts on iTunes and Google Play.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, it's our annual summer book show. Tell us what's on your reading list this summer. Or if you need some help creating that reading list, our guests are here with their picks. So join us, The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send email to exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. Also, any book mentioned on the show today will be on our website later on, nhpr.org/exchange. So any books that our listeners mention, and of course the picks of our guests. And all of you, just before the break, we were talking about nonfiction and interest in these sort of hidden stories of history. What about politics? Michael, I'll turn to you first. This is not a big political year, you know, people kind of taking a breath before the midterm elections. Is there anything on the political list that's drawing your readers' attention?
Well, there's nothing that seems to be making sense of our precise moment. And there's nothing out yet. I mean, I'm sure these books are being written. People are still going back to Hillbilly Elegy,
Remind us what that was. We talked about that last time.
By a young man named Vance. He's in his early 30s, and he wrote basically about what it's like to grow up in Appalachia and how people just feel cut off from their culture and really will just do things that hurt themselves just to spite the rest of us. It's a little bit of a controversial memoir because some people love it and some people don't. But it's definitely been the go-to book to understand our politics these days. There's a new book out about the Hillary Clinton campaign called Shattered, which is one of those tell-all memoirs where all the political operatives, gossip about each other and dish the dirt on everything that happened in the previous year. And it's going to be very useful as a historical document, but. But when all is said and done, I mean, you know, the difference between a doomed campaign and a wildly successful campaign this time was 100,000 votes. So,
what about Al Franken? He's got a book out that's on a bunch of lists this summer.
The Franken book. Let me tell a little story about that. It came out, and you know, he wrote a book, with the very mild title, "Rush Limbaugh's a Big Fat Idiot." And he also wrote a book called Lies and the Lying Liars That Tell Them. So he's got a point of view. And he's also very funny. He was on Saturday Night Live, as people know, did a great Mick Jagger imitation, which I just saw on YouTube again for the first time in some years. But anyway, it's a political memoir. And it's the story of how he went from being a comedian to deliberately not being a comedian and being a U.S. senator from Minnesota. And it's very funny. I mean, the book first came out, we sold out immediately because it was more popular than the publisher anticipated. And one of my booksellers said, well, you've got a copy at home. Bring it in to fill this special order. I said, I can't. She said, why not? And I said, well, I snorted coffee on some of the pages.
Because you were laughing so hard?
Yes.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
That's
so, funny. I mean, and I'm a jaded old bookseller. So, you know, if that happens to me, it's going to happen to everybody else.
Well, speaking of memoirs, so there are a couple other memoirs that are big this summer. And one about Big Pappy. Dan?
Yeah, there's a great great new biography, autobiography that David Ortiz has done with
Michael Holly.
Can't really call it a memoir.
It's a memoir. It's his life as told to Michael Holly, who is the sports radio and former Boston Globe writer.
Right.
Michael's a great writer. He's done a lot of books on the Patriots, and he's co-written this book with David Ortiz. That is was the go-to gift for Father's Day.
Oh yeah.
Just to jump back to the politics for a second, I have a great book by two former Boston Globe writers, Thomas Oliphant and Curtis Wilkie, on JFK's 5-year drive to the presidency. That's a wonderful political history. It's called The Road to Camelot, Inside JFK's 5-year Campaign. And I can't recommend that highly enough.
Kind of the flip side of the Hillary Clinton book the subtitle is Inside Hillary Clinton's Doomed Campaign. You know, Democrats can read that and then they can read the JFK book. Memoirs to you too, Lori. I know this is popular in the summer.
Definitely popular. One that I would recommend right now, we have a new poet laureate in the United States, Tracy K. Smith. She was born in Massachusetts, raised in California, now lives down in New Jersey, works at Princeton. One of her most popular poetry books is Life on Mars, which was published in 2011. But her memoir did even better, Ordinary Light, published in 2015. She explores her coming of age and the meaning of home against the backdrop of race and faith and her relationship with her mother. And so it was really, really well done, very poignant, very well written, as you can imagine.
Do you want to jump back in, Michael, with one more?
Oh, with Roxane Gay has just published. She's the author of Bad Feminist, and she's a very good writer. And she's written a memoir called Hunger, and the subtitle is A Memoir of My Body. And Roxane Gay is like 6'3", and at one point she was like 575 pounds. And she's just a larger-than-life woman. And she tells the story in this memoir of how that feels, why it happened, what is continuing to happen in her life. It's really just a very honest and well-written look at what it means to be an oversized black woman in America. Ta-Nehisi Coates wrote about the black body and the experience of not being in control of your own body. And Roxane Gay gets at that experience as well, with the added difficulty, I suppose, in our culture of also being a woman. So, it's a fascinating book and very well done. And as I was reading it, I was saying, boy, this is intense. What does a woman like this read for fun? So I looked around and I found a book. This isn't on my list, but I found a book called We Are Never Meeting in Real Life, essays by Samantha Irby, also by, a larger than life black woman. But this time it's, essays that are hysterically profane and funny. So
that's what the other author reads
Roxane,
for fun.
Roxane Gay. Actually, there's a blurb from her on the cover. It says, "Cracked my heart all the way open, as close to perfect as an essay collection can get," says Roxane Gay. So in those two books right there, that might kill a month for you over the summer.
Go ahead, Dan.
Well, Roxane Gay has a New Hampshire connection. She's actually a grad of Phillips Exeter Academy. So she spent her prep school years there. But definitely an amazing voice and honored and awarded writer. So definitely worth a read. I have a memoir that I wanted to promote called Priest Daddy, a memoir by Patricia Lockwood. It's about a woman whose father is one of the only married Catholic priests. He's a bit of an iconoclast, a bit irreverent. It's this quirk of canonical law that allows him to be married and a priest. And in her early adulthood, she and her husband are forced to move back in with her mother and her father, the priest. And it's this hilarious and wonderfully touching memoir about they're kind of living with their parents in the rectory at the Catholic Church.
So a true story.
It's a true story. It's a memoir by Patricia Lockwood called Priest Daddy.
Again, the number for you to join us here in the Exchange, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Lots of emails. Here's one from Ray in Dalton, who says, "For those readers who think they do not have time to read a novel, short stories by Anton Chekhov," another Russian author that's come up a couple times already today. And then Ray says, "For those who have a lot of time, the unabridged Les Miserables," says, "Took me many moons to read it, but worth the effort." Thank you for those recommendations.
Is there an unabridged available in English? Completely unabridged. I think the abridged version is like 1,500 pages.
Yeah, I don't know.
Wow, okay.
Back to the phones. Susan's calling from Hancock. Hi, Susan. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Laura. I love your show.
Good.
I can tell you, first of all. And the book that I reread almost every summer is called Where Rivers Change Direction by Mark Sprague.
And why do you reread it? Susan, we were talking about this earlier with Dan.
Because it's a memoir. He grew up in Wyoming on the oldest running dude ranch in the United States, I believe. And his connection to the earth, his description, I feel that every
chapter is like an essay in itself, and it's just a wonderful, wonderful story.
All right. Susan, thank you very much for the call. And here is another recommendation from Dawn in Wilton. A great summer book is Stranger in the Woods by Michael Finkel. Dawn says, a tale of someone who wanted nothing more to do with society and walked away, how he survived and how he was caught. Dawn says, tough to put down. That's what we like from a summer book, tough to put down. I think this is on both Dan and Michael's list. You both got it right in front of you.
Absolutely, yeah. It's a fascinating main story, and it's the story of the wonderfully named Christopher Knight. I mean, you can't, you know, if it was fiction, you say maybe that name's a little bit too much on the nose. Maybe we ought to change it. But he's a hermit who lived for decades in the wilds of Maine, just basically surviving by quietly stealing from families that went to Maine either on vacation or lived there year round. And he had this camp just off in this wilderness. It's a great story. And also Finkel takes the opportunity to offer us a history and a meditation on what it means to be a hermit, to be alone. It's a marvelous book, great summer read.
It's on a lot of lists, I know. Yeah. Dan, go ahead.
It's very well written, a wonderful book. Both Mark DeCarteret and I read this and have been hand-selling it to our patrons. We actually had a gentleman in the other day looking for the book because his camp was one of the camps that was hit by the hermit.
Yeah.
He lost a sleeping bag and some other items. So he was telling us the story of like how this mystery evolved over decades in these camps along this lake and in this area. It's an amazing, another kind of amazing story that's been exhumed from, a fairly small regional thing. And it's just, it's been a very popular book, not only in New England, but I think nationally.
Well, speaking of regional authors and New Hampshire authors, Lori, first, let's just go regional. Who do you like this summer from either New Hampshire or Maine or Vermont or Massachusetts?
Well, the big one that we're seeing and getting requests for, and not just at my library, but libraries across the state, is Ginny Moon by Benjamin Ludwig. He is a middle school teacher from Dover. It's a debut novel. It's about really family coming of age. The main character is a teenage girl with autism who uses just about any means to get back with her mother and baby sister again.
She's adopted.
And she goes through a number of foster homes, and it's a really interesting read. What I took away from it, and I'm still reading it right now, what I'm taking away from it is how we really truly don't know how to listen to other people. And other people meaning people who, not just, those around us, but those who we may overlook in just passing by on the street. We're not listening to people when they talk to us or looking at their body language. It's a paying attention and being present. But
I just want to jump in before you keep going on other possible local authors. Ginny Moon, we got a couple copies here at the station. And, you know, we don't typically do fiction. So I thought, well, I'm not really sure. And then my younger son, who comes in sometimes here at work, said, what's this book? I don't know. So I said, all right, I'll read 10 pages. You read 10 pages and we'll report back to each other. So he cracked it open last night and... A long time later, I went and said, how's it going? He said, I'm on page 100.
That's awesome.
Could not put it down.
See, that's really good. This book got a lot of good reviews. It got good reviews in all the major review sources. So a lot of demand for that this summer.
So it's kind of funny that you mention it because we were just talking about this last night. So as soon as I finish my other young adult novel, I'll pick up this one. Would you categorize this as a young adult novel, Lori?
Well, I think it borders. It goes, but because the main character is a teenage girl. So, you know, I think it could go both ways. It really is going to be, this is why it's important for doing what you're doing, parents reading alongside their children and then talking about books. That's what I do with my kids, and that's what I'd encourage any parent to do.
Well, and he said, sometimes young teenage boys have what you might nicely call an empathy gap, and he said that it helped him understand.
Yeah.
He said it helped him understand what it was like to have autism. I was really struck by that. Go ahead, Dan, and then Michael.
Well,
yeah.
Benjamin Ludwig is a New Hampshire writer who's written an amazing book. Again, that's getting national attention. It's not a regional phenomena. He's worked in education for a long time. I think he's worked with young adults, and he kind of understands them. And he's written this wonderful portrait of how, as Lori said, they can be overlooked. Their strengths their great strengths and their great weaknesses can be missed. And I just, this book is wonderful. I'm delighted your son is reading it. Ginny Moon, a novel by Benjamin Ludwig.
Other New Hampshire or New England authors, Dan?
We have another book that is categorized as YA, but is really a book for teens and up. It's by a local author in Exeter, Lisa Bunker. It's called Felix Is, and Is is YZ, so Felix YZ. It's about a young man who is smushed together through an experiment of his father with a fourth-dimensional alien. And Felix, and this has been going on for about 10 years now, and Felix is getting to the age where if the alien stays smushed together with him, he will die. So they have to be severed. And this is coming up, and the story is told through journal entries of the protagonist, Felix. And it's just a wonderful sort of coming-of-age story, but it's for adults. It's published as a YA book, but I think often books are published as YA books because they're about teenagers. And that does not mean that they should only be read by young adults and teenagers. Yeah. This is a book that anyone can read and love. Lisa is also a wonderful sort of word and grammar freak. And there's a wonderful word and grammar play in this book. So, again, I can't recommend this highly enough as well.
Wow. I think I'm going to end up spending my summer reading young adult because I just keep getting drawn in. That sounds amazing. Michael?
Well, YA, young adult, is a state of mind. I mean, these books are published for ages 10 through 30 through 100, really. I mean, we had a reader come in the other day and said, where's your YA section? And I said, are you buying a gift or something? He says, no, I find that that books that are published for adults in fantasy, which I love, just don't do the trick for me. And they're really just, there's just a pure, you know, distillation of what I want in a fantasy novel in the YA section. I said, well, wow, here it is, you know. I think it is a state of mind, and people of all ages can find things to enjoy in the YA section. What I'd like to talk about there's a novel in verse by a Warner author named David Elliott, who's one of the funniest guys you'll ever meet. Called Bull, and it's the myth of the Minotaur told in verse that's not just classical but also like hip-hop oriented, very funny. It's the story of, you know, from Greek mythology translated into the modern idiom for young adults of all ages, and it's been such a hit at our store, and it's one of the features in our new YA book club that's meeting this summer. So I'd recommend this for young adults of all ages.
Well, and speaking of mythology, you all mentioned series are popular in the summer. People, you know, they've got time to read book after book. We can't get away from the Percy Jackson series.
No,
I'm guessing that's hard to keep on the shelves.
It is. That's one of the harder ones. And now Rick Riordan has a new series out for a slightly younger audience. It's a book 2, Trials of Apollo. Dark Prophecy is coming out. It actually came out on the 2nd of May. So anything Greek mythology related tends to go off the shelves pretty quick, especially if it's a series.
Sure. And that's actually the one that I'm reading right now.
Apollo. Is it?
Yeah, I have to finish that one. Then I can get to Ginny Moon. But I know that has been really popular in that whole Greek mythology and Norse mythology, too. Right, Dan?
Absolutely. Neil Gaiman just published his book for, again, teens and adults on Norse mythology. So, and of course, Marvel is constantly promoting Norse mythology.
Yep. Thor and his hammer, which is apparently pronounced Mjolnir, which I just can't believe. But anyway, when I was a kid, I pronounced it differently.
Well, if you want to know more about young adult novels, teen reading, we did a whole program just on that because a lot of people say we're sort of in a golden age for young adult writers. So we did a whole program on that. We will link to it on our website, where, of course, you will also find all the names of the books mentioned during this show, our guests' picks, and any books that our listeners have mentioned. We'll put that up later today at nhpr.org/exchange. More of our summer book show in just a moment. Stay with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
I want to know why it is that people suggest telling your congressional representatives how you feel about the issues. Does it make a difference?
Who can answer the burning questions about government operations?
How does the Electoral College work? Is the system outdated in our current democracy system?
What is a filibuster and what purpose does it serve in the government?
Who can help us cleave these Gordian knots?
Civics 101.
Subscribe now. wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, what to read this summer. We're getting our guests' recommendations and those of our listeners. So let's hear from you. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. Our guests are Laurie Fisher, director of the Baker Free Library in Bow, Michael Herman, owner of Gibson's Bookstore in Concord, and Dan Chartrand, owner of Water Street Bookstore in Exeter. And Dan, you wanted to mention one more regional or local author, since we were talking about that before the break.
Just a quick mention. Tom Ryan is the author of a book that has an amazing following, not only readers, but there's also an online community that's come together around his book, Following Atticus. And he has a new book about Will's Red Coat, the story of one old dog who chose to live again. For people that loved Following Atticus, you've got to read Will's Red Coat, which is the story of his adopting a dog that had been kind of cast aside, an older dog, and how he brought him back to life for a couple of years and spent that time with him. Tom is an amazing writer and also an amazing human being who I like to say is one of those people that takes things too far in the best way possible.
Well, the cover is adorable. It's this little white dog with a red coat on. So 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Lots of emails, folks. Here's one from a listener who didn't give a name, but this person says they also reread a novel every summer. We talked about that earlier. This struck a chord for me when one of the guests said, I reread a novel every summer. Here I sit today rereading all the great works of Charles Dickens. This is an email from Tony. Tony, thank you so much for that. Let's talk a little bit more about fiction. We haven't completely jumped into that pool. And Lori, what's popular among your patrons this summer for fiction?
Well, we have a pretty big thriller, crime, and suspense audience. So anything by John Grisham, so his latest Camino Island, that's got reserves out the wazoo. Also, one of the other bigger ones that we're seeing go out is Into the Water by Paula Hawkins. Hawkins is back with this one after, everybody knows, Girl on the Train. This one is about a single mother who's found dead in the local river. She leaves her only daughter behind to care for her sister. Her sister, who's vowed to never return, is forced back to the place she came from.
To care for her niece.
Yes. So, you know, there are a lot of read likes for this, though. This book will not stay in our library. We have multiple copies right now. You could read Gillian Flynn, author of Gone Girl. You know, we still have reserves on that, believe it or not. and then Ruth Ware, In the Dark, Dark Wood, and Tana French, The Trespasser. Those are other read likes for that kind of novel.
So when you mentioned at the beginning of the show that this time of year, you know, you can't keep Jodi Picoult, Stephen King, you know, those sort of awesome fat beach reads. What do you give folks when they come in and they say, hey, I want this, you know, and you don't have it?
Well, we do a reader's advisory is what we call it. And I know Dan and Michael do the same thing. If you don't happen to have a copy of the exact book, you try to steer them to something that's similar. A lot of libraries use the service novelist, which is through the state library. And we're able to pull up a lot of author names of similar, you know, similar to the author they're interested in or titles that are similar to the particular book they're in. So we use that resource quite a bit.
Now, that's interesting. I had not heard of that. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Novelist, and patrons can access this too through any of their public libraries. You just need your library card. It's an online resource. You go to your library's website. You should be able to log into their catalog with your card. And then you click on the EBSCO services that come through the state library. Should be right on the homepage of your library's catalog. And through there, you'll see there's two things. There's Novelist K-8, where you can get read-like recommendations for younger kids through, they say, grade 8, but usually goes up to a little higher, and then adult, and just regular novelist. And novelist usually includes some YA titles as well.
Wow, real interesting. Fiction, I know you guys have a lot. Dan?
Well, I'll push J. Courtney Sullivan's Saints for All Occasions. She's a New England author who has written The Engagements, Maine, and Commencement previously. This is a great story of two sisters who immigrated from Ireland. One became a nun under sort of shadowy circumstances. And the wayward son of the other sister has just died And now she needs to reconnect with the sister who's in the convent. And it's just amazing writing. J. Courtney Sullivan has carved out an incredible career in a very short time. And she's someone that everyone in New England and this country should read. So saints for all occasions.
Yeah, that was on my list too, Laura. Emma Straub, who wrote a novel called The Vacationers and is just opening up her own bookstore in Brooklyn, said this book is fabulous and smart. And she says it feels bigger than her other novels. You know, just a broad canvas, perfect summer read, yeah. You know.
Sounds like it. How about you, Michael? Fiction.
Well, there's a few that I wanted to recommend. I guess I'll start with The Magpie Murders by Anthony Horowitz. This is almost 500 pages, so it's a nice hefty summer read. It's for fans of Agatha Christie, and it's also for fans of sort of like modernist fiction in a way, because Horowitz takes like the version. It's like a Hercule Poirot book called The Magpie Murders, and he has it written by a fictional writer named Alan Conway. But then in the story outside of that novel, Alan Conway, the writer, the fictional writer, dies. And so it's an uncompleted manuscript. And so, you know, you have the people that are picking up the pieces after he dies are trying to solve that murder. So it's a novel within a novel, and it's a great Agatha Christie-style novel, Hercule Poirot novel inside it. And it's also just this puzzle piece. It's part crime novel. It's part pastiche. You know, it's got it's kind of a great whodunit. You know, it's got a great period feel inside the novel. You know, it's a great summer read. Yeah, I just you know, it's
another one of those you can't put it down.
It's got a lot going for
right.
it.
Right, Lori.
I have one that I'm reading right now that I just want to mention. It's called The Salt House by Lisa Duffy. She's a debut author right now, and I'm just finishing this. This is about how a family is dealing with the complexities of grief after their youngest child dies in an accident. It's set on the coast of Maine. And what makes this different than a lot of the summer reads we normally see people take out is that this is about a family that lives there. They're locals. It's not about vacationers to the coast. And I found this really well written, pretty deep. It has shades of Ellen Hildebrand. That's a little bit lighter than this book, but really I enjoyed this tremendously.
Well, it's interesting. Often on this program, when we get together, we talk about, you know, the rich literary traditions here in New Hampshire. And today, Maine seems to be getting a lot of the attention. A lot of the books you all have mentioned happen to be set in Maine or by Maine authors. Go ahead, Dan, another fiction.
Well, there's a novel on our list. It's recommended by Steph, who is our story manager. It's called Salt Houses, a novel by Halla Alyan. So similar title, but different book. And this tells the story of sort of the Palestinian experience beginning during the Six-Day War in 1967 and continuing through the century. It really explains the way that later generations compensated for the displacement of the Palestinian community. And Steph writes that Alyan's writing is quite beautiful. She's a poet, and her prose is quietly lyrical and a pleasure to read, in addition to getting all this great sort of fictional information about the Palestinian experience. So Salt Houses by Halla Alyan.
Almost like political fiction or historical
it's more,
fiction.
It's more sort of a historical fiction, kind of chronicling the experience of generations moving across that landscape.
Something that's hard for us
to understand.
And being
shuffled around.
Well, and our listeners seem to be in the mood for nonfiction, at least those who sent us emails. Here's an email from Diane in Nashua. For anyone seeking to understand the lingering divide between civility and peace, justice and injustice, and the hostility surrounding the occurrence of police action in Black Lives Matter, Diane says, I'm becoming better informed from Chris Hayes, A Colony in a Nation. Diane, thank you for that one. Here's a couple recommendations from Tom in Portsmouth. The first is Angry White Men, written by Professor Michael Kimmel, published 3 years before the recent presidential election. Tom says the second is A Nation of Nations by NPR's own Tom Gelton, which provides a valuable perspective on the changes to our national structure and voting patterns since the 1965 Immigration Act. And by the way, we interviewed Tom Gelton, gosh, I think it was a year ago or so on that book. So people can look that up as well. Tom, thank you for the email. But other nonfiction, Michael, that you want to mention?
Oh, nonfiction? Well,
I'm sorry, fiction.
Oh, I can go either way. Which one?
Yeah, fiction. Our listeners seem to be interested in nonfiction, but we should flesh out the fiction category a little bit more.
Well, here's a book that just came out this week that Lee Child, the author of the Jack Reacher series, says is probably the best cop novel ever written. And it just came out this week. I haven't had a chance to read it yet, but I'm really looking forward to it. It's Don Winslow's book called The Force. And it's all about good cops who are also bad cops. You know, it's an elite anti-drug, anti-gun, gang warfare sort of police force in Manhattan. And in Manhattan North, including Harlem, this group of cops called Da Force goes after all these bad guys. But then they, in the course of that, they become bad guys themselves. And it reminded me, I remember reading a review of Richard Price's novel, The Whites, a couple of years ago. I looked this up. And somebody asked Richard Price why somebody with obvious literary talents would spend their time writing essentially genre fiction, you know, stories, you know, police stories, cop stories, crime stories. And Price said back to him, you know, there's no better way to get to know a city than to write about crime and police. If you really want to give a portrait of a city and flesh it out and investigate it through fiction, the best way is to go through the door that's labeled crime and police.
Let's take another call, all of you. And Peggy's in Center Harbor. Hi, Peggy. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'll be quick. I have a nonfiction and a fiction to recommend. The nonfiction is David McCullough, The American Spirit. It's his latest book, and I love all his books. It's The American Spirit, Who We Are and What We Stand For.
Wow.
And it's all of his speeches, or a lot of his speeches that he has made over the years, and it's wonderful reading. And the fiction I'd like to recommend is The Life We Bury by Alan Eskins. It's a murder mystery, but very suspenseful. Can't put it down. Lots of twists and turns, and lots of human interest, too.
All right. Peggy, thank you for those recommendations. And again, I want to let everybody know, later today, we'll put the recommendations of our guests and our listeners on our website. So, Peggy, thank you for that one. You know, while we're talking about summer reading, all of you, I did want to just quickly touch on summer reading programs at libraries around the state. Lori Fisher, and I wonder what you're doing in Bow.
We are doing a Once Upon a Summer Reading, which is our theme is obviously fairy tales. And so we have a whole section of anything to do with knights, dragons, princesses, fantasy. And it's not just for kids anymore. Many libraries across the state do summer reading programs for all ages.
I wanted to ask you about that. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. We've grown our program over the past couple of years. We now have over 18 prize sponsors for just our adult and teens from around the area. Gibson's is one of our prize sponsors. Thank you, Michael.
Oh, yeah, you're welcome.
So, you know, and it's great for families to be able to do this together. That doesn't mean that parents need to read 20 books over the summer. What the important thing is that the kids are seeing them read and then seeing them either submit online or coming into the library to write down what they've read to put themselves out there saying, I'm reading just like you're reading to their kids.
So you've sort of moved beyond this sort of summer reading program for little kids and they get stickers and prizes and so forth.
They do. It's just we've expanded it to be a little more sophisticated for adults with gas cards and coffee cards and coupons.
Wow, I'm coming
and
to your
stuff
library.
Like that. Yeah, we get a quite a bit of participation and it's growing every year. And I know a lot of libraries around the state do that.
Okay, so Michael, there was a book on your list that caught my attention. Summertime, True Confession, is not a time when I'm interested in cooking. I'm interested in seeing how little cooking I can do. You had a cookbook on your list.
I did, yeah. This one just caught my eye, and it's on the theme of salt that it was in the title of a couple of books ago. Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat by Samin Nosrat. Subtitle is Mastering the Elements of Good Cooking, and apparently those are the four elements. And this is a fellow who worked at Chez Panisse for a long time. So he's got an introductory essay by Alice Waters, and Michael Pollan also wrote a foreword.
Okay, so very famous chef,
yeah,
author types.
Yeah, and this is a very useful book. I mean, it's got a lot of food science in it, but it's also very entertaining, and it's got great illustrations, including like a whole a wheel that describes the world of acid, you know, just different applications, just different ways of using it. And I'm the guy who does the dishes after my wife prepares the gourmet meal, but I like reading about cooking and food as well as consuming food. So anyway, It's a great cookbook. I thought I should mention that.
All right. Dan, any cookbooks this time of year? Doesn't seem like the time of year, but maybe I'm wrong.
We have a book by Ellen Zakos, who's the daughter of Kimon Zakos, who was a longtime community figure and political figure in New Hampshire. She's written this wonderful book from her practice as a forager. It's called The Wildcrafted Cocktail. I've tried several of these drinks out of here. It is an amazing book. I can't recommend it highly enough.
Wow, so summer cocktails.
So, yeah.
Maybe you just thought it was amazing.
You go out into the landscape. You go out in the landscape and you forage wonderful edibles.
Research, Laura.
And then you infuse, and then you create these cocktails. And it's Ellen has created this amazing book. I can't recommend it highly enough.
Well, for you two booksellers, and then I have a different question for Lori, but for you two, what are you anticipating in the fall, Dan?
I'm going to kick that to Michael.
Kick that to Michael.
He has a couple of great suggestions.
And, not that there wasn't enough here, because the table, and listeners can look online, we'll have some photos on Instagram and so forth of all the books that the guys brought in. But what are you looking forward to in the fall?
There's a few that weren't able to get to, including The Dry by Jane Harper, which is a mystery novel that came out in January, and it's just picking up again over the summer because it's a great first novel, Australian novelist. What I'm really looking forward to in the fall, there's a lot, actually. I'm almost finished with My Absolute Darling by Gabriel Tallent, this is his first novel, and it's hard to know how to describe this except as like a hillbilly Lolita. I mean, it's with all the respect that should entail. It's extremely well written. It's a heartbreaking story of a 14-year-old girl and her troubled relationship with her father, out in California. Gabriel Tallent graduated from college in 2010, which means that I have ties older than Gabriel Tallent. But anyway, this novel's coming out at the end of August.
So promising young novelist.
Yeah. Also at the end of August, Nicole Krauss's first novel in many years called Forest Dark is coming out. And it's got a blurb by Philip Roth on the cover, which Philip Roth never blurbs books. He says it's a great read.
Lori, any other book that you really want to mention before we close out today?
I think another one that's really hot right now is Beartown by Frederick Backman. Yep. He's the author of A Man Called Ove, which a lot of people know from the movie. I've had some patrons come in and tell me they felt it was Peekle-esque in how he approached it, which is somewhat of a recommendation. So I would check that one out, too. It's a hot one on our ebooks and downloadable audio, too.
Okay, Dan.
Last book. This is a recommendation from our bookseller, Jill, The Essex Serpent by Sarah Perry. It's on the Independent Booksellers bestseller list. A wonderful 19th century English historical novel.
All right. All of you, thank you so much. Have a great summer. Thank you so much for being here. And we will put all the books, again, mentioned during the show on our website, nhpr.org/exchange. This is The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.